Hello, my name is Hugh Shields and I am the Executive Technical Director at the IASB. I'm joined by Steve Cooper, IASB board member, to discuss the decisions taken at the February board meeting. I should start by saying that the views shared in this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily represent those of the IASB. Well, just to start in relation to the insurance contracts project, and to recap, at its January 2016 meeting, the board completed its planned technical decisions on the accounting for insurance contracts. And therefore, in February, the board met to review the due process steps that it has taken so far in developing the new insurance contract standards. It also considered the re-exposure criteria in the due process handbook. All 14 board members confirmed that they are satisfied that the board has completed all necessary due process steps on the insurance contracts project and has therefore instructed the staff to commence the drafting process. No board members intend at this time to dissent from the issuance of the standard on insurance contracts. The board then turns its attention to goodwill and impairment, and in particular to discuss the findings of the IASB's post-implementation review of IFRS 3 on business combinations. The board continued its discussions on the following three topics covered by the project. Firstly, the identification and measurement of intangible assets in a business combination. Secondly, the subsequent accounting for goodwill, including the relative merits of an impairment-only approach and an amortisation and impairment approach. And thirdly, improving the impairment requirements for goodwill and other non-current non-financial assets in IAS 36, the standard covering impairment of assets. No decisions were made. I'll now pass back to Steve to carry on the discussion.
Okay, thanks Hugh. So the next topic that was discussed is the measurement of interest in associates and joint ventures. That is, substance form part of the net investment in those associates or joint ventures. Now, this is really an interaction problem, an interaction between IFRS 9 and IAS 28. It's a problem that isn't specifically to do with IFRS 9 because it applied to IAS 39 as well. But I think some have argued that this is an issue that has become more prominent because of the move to IFRS 9 and the expected loss model. And hence, this request came to the Interpretations Committee for clarification, and the Interpretations Committee have asked for the board input, which is why the board was discussing it at this meeting. And the issue is to do with so-called other long-term interests in an associate. So this is where the investor has an interest in an associate that goes beyond simply the equity investment. It might be, for example, a long-term debt investment in the associate. And when you assess that investment for impairment, should you apply the requirements of IFRS 9, so the impairment requirements of it as a financial instrument, or should you apply the impairment requirements specified in IAS 28 that would be applied to the normal net investment in that associate? And which should you apply, and maybe you should apply both? So the board came to some decisions about how this should be done. Firstly, the question of whether the scope exemption in IFRS 9 applies to these long-term interests or not. And then how the interaction works between the IFRS 9 and IAS 28 requirements. So the first decision of the board was that the scope exemption in IFRS 9 does not apply to the long-term interest. So that means that when you have this long-term interest, you would assess whether it should be impaired using the impairment requirements of IFRS 9. The scope exemption only applies to an interest in an associate that is equity accounted, hence, in other words, the equity interest, and wouldn't apply to this a debt interest that was accounted for under IFRS 9. And then, as regards the interaction with IFRS 9 and IAS 28, because the scope exemption does not apply, you would first assess this interest for impairment using IFRS 9. then you would include that other long-term interest for the purpose of allocating losses under the equity accounting requirements. And then in addition, you would assess the net investment for impairment applying the requirements of IAS 28. So you would look to both IFRS 9 and IAS 28 in terms of assessing the overall impairment of the interest in that associate or joint venture. So this, the deliberations of the board and the recommendations the board's come up with will be fed back to the Interpretations Committee for them to include in their deliberations in due course. So that was IFRS 9 and IAS 28.
Okay, I shall continue to discuss a further discussion the board had in relation to the classification of liabilities. Now here the board considered how its proposals in its exposure draft on the classification of liabilities should be applied when conditions in the lending agreement are tested or reviewed after the end of the reporting period. The board tentatively decided that compliance with any conditions in the lending agreement should be assessed as at the reporting date. It also decided that any requirement in the lending agreement to test compliance with those conditions at a date after the end of the reporting period should not change the requirement for classification to be based on assessment of a compliance as at the end of the reporting period. The board further tentatively decided that the proposed amendments should require that compliance with the condition as at the end of the reporting period should determine whether a right that is subject to that condition should affect classification. It also further tentatively decided that when an agreement includes a periodic review clause in which the lender has the right to demand repayment, that the entity has a right to defer settlement only up to the date of the periodic review. And finally, the board tentatively decided that the board's proposals that classification of a liability is based on rights in existence at the end of the reporting period and compliance with any conditions is assessed as at the end of the reporting period should not be amended in respect of periodic review clause. And finally, the board turned its attentions to the financial instruments with characteristics of equity project. And in this meeting, the board discussed the further development of three approaches known as alpha, beta, and gamma. And these approaches had previously been identified as potential ways of improving IAS 32, the standard which covers the presentation of financial instruments. And these three approaches classify claims as either liabilities or equity based on different features of the claims as they relate to different assessments of both the entity's financial position and its financial performance. The board's discussions in this meeting focused on developing approach gamma, and the reason for that is it is approach gamma which distinguishes claims based on a combination of the features used to distinguish claims in the other approaches. Now, the board considered three different papers in relation to this project. The first project covered the presentation of subclasses of liabilities, including the presentation of income and expense from particular types of liabilities. And in particular, the board indicated that under the gamma approach, it would be useful to distinguish between income or expenses that arise from liabilities for a specified amount, i.e. an amount which is determined independently from the entity's economic resources, and income and expense that arises from liabilities that depend on a residual amount. The board further discussed the presentation of liabilities with different features on the face of the statement of financial position. And the board indicated that under the gamma approach, it would be useful to present separately liabilities that depend on a residual amount. In its second paper, the board considered another aspect of presentation, namely the attribution of profit or loss and other comprehensive income to subclasses of equity. And the board noted that existing IFRS standards require the attribution of profit or loss and other comprehensive income between non-controlling interests and parent equity interests. The board indicated that under all of the approaches being considered, it would be useful to require entities to attribute profit or loss and other comprehensive income to some classes of equity other than the ordinary shares of the parent entity. The board also noted that it would be useful to update the carrying amount of each subclass of equity to reflect any such attribution. The board will discuss the specific requirements for determining the amounts attributed to classes of equity at a future meeting. And finally, the board considered claims with conditional alternative settlement outcomes. The board discussed in particular claims with alternative liability or equity settlement outcomes that are firstly conditional on rights within the control of the entity, or secondly contingent on the occurrence or non-occurrence of uncertain future events beyond the control of both the entity and the holder of the claim. The board will continue to consider these issues at a future meeting. So that concludes the summary of the February board meeting. And just to conclude by reminding you that the official summary of the February board meeting, called the AIASB update, can be found on the IFRS Foundation's website, www.ifrs.org. That also contains further information on other topics that were discussed at that meeting. Thank you for listening.